show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. We got some Royals things to talk about, big happenings this week. But first, as always, introductions. I am Jeff Hur, and with me, as always, the man who will never be traded if I have anything to say about it, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this actually very pleasant summer evening?
Yeah, the one nice day. Yeah, I worked that no trade clause into my contract. It's pretty wise move, I think. It, I got nowhere else to go, and I don't want my hand forced. So,
so you stay away, you Baltimore Orioles podcast.
Oh God, yeah, because they're definitely on the no trade list. Don't want to go to Baltimore.
Don't go to Baltimore.
The wire was enough. So,
but while you may be, the wire was enough. Yes, indeed. And while you may be staying here for the foreseeable future, one person who is not going to be in Kansas City for the foreseeable future, I am sad to say, is unfortunately Kelvin Herrera. Now, we all knew it was coming, so it's not a surprise by any means, but that doesn't mean that it's not sad. You know, it's just as we continue to see these last kind of pieces of that World Series team trickle out of Kauffman, out of Kansas City, onto other teams, it's, you know, it's unfortunate. That it has to be that way, but that's the way it is. The Royals got three prospects in his place, and I am unfortunately blanking on the names right now. I'm gonna have to pull it up real quick.
I got them.
I know we've got okay.
They traded Kelvin Herrera for Kelvin Gutierrez, Blake Perkins, and Johannes Morel. I think that's how you pronounce that name. All three guys, like Gutierrez is a third baseman. He was, I think, MLB.com's number 10 prospect in the national system. Perkins was their number 11. Morel is all of 17 years old. He'll be 18 in August. So, you know, three pieces, three guys. It's a little mixed on the reaction from different scouts. I've seen some reporters where they've mentioned that scouts think that they'll all be big leaguers, and some scouts think they'll all be maybe role players, and some scouts just aren't sure. And so it's like, I guess the Royals felt comfortable with this group. It seems awfully light for kind of what we expected, especially when, you know, the Nationals are a team that has always needed closing help, has always really been active in getting bullpen arms. And Herrera was probably the best bullpen arm available. And especially this time of year, it's not even July. I mean, usually these kind of trades go down, you know, late July. You know, I remember the Samardzija trade in 2014 was over 4th of July weekend, and even that felt early. And we're 2 weeks away from the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. So the timing of it is like, that's kind of weird too. So I really kind of figured that they would have one of those like top five type of Washington prospects in there. So I don't know. I mean, there's speculation that maybe the Royals are worried about Herrera and potential injury. I mean, last year he had a lot of issues with different things, a lot of kind of forearm issues and a lot of control issues, and he had a bad outing against the Reds, where he gave up a home run and walked two, but only the first two batters he's walked all year. So, I mean, it's not like that's a regular problem.
Right.
And I don't think that it's like, oh, dang, he gave up a homer, walked two, we better trade him. I think it's like maybe they have a feeling that they want to jump now, get it out of the way, get it done. They weren't sure they were going to get a better offer. So I don't know. It's interesting. You know, kind of surprising at this point. But the Royals are 22-51 as today's game starts. So, you know, they didn't have much incentive to keep him. My mom asked when, like, she saw the news, she was like, why did they trade their closer? I'm like, well, I mean, they don't have a lot of leads to protect. So, I mean, what's he going to do? What, they don't really need a closer if they're going to only win 35 more games the rest. God, I hope they win at least 35 more games the rest of the year.
Geez.
I mean, yeah. So I kind of confused, kind of, you know, surprised on a little bit of everything on this deal. It's a little, it's weird. The timing, the return, everything's a little off, a little soon.
Yeah. And, you know, there was a lot of people that brought up possibly the Royals, you know, fearing or maybe even knew he was injured or something. And, you know, I mean, no news of any of that sort has come out, obviously. And I think you were the one that pointed it out that I agree with in our Slack chat that, you know, Dayton Moore is not the kind of guy who would do such a something like that in terms, you know, looking at Wade Davis. You know, I mean, obviously Wade Davis was hurt to where, you know, he was on the DL, so he couldn't be traded. But, you know, the Royals could have tried to make a move before that, and knowing that maybe he had issues, maybe that's what slowed it down. But anyway, you know, I think that's a good point that you made, that I don't think that Dayton Moore would do that. So, you know, I don't necessarily subscribe to that. But them being spooked about his last performance and that maybe he would catch the yips like he did last year, and it would be, you know, he would completely erode his trade value. That I'm a little bit more, it's a little bit easier for me to buy into something like that than, you know, that they were trying to game the injury situation. But, you know, that still seems, with a player of Herrera's caliber, I think you would have more confidence in him than that. So
right.
Seems kind of odd. I do agree, you know, and I was definitely expecting, I was expecting one of two things, really. And I guess we technically got one that I was expecting. But, you know, I thought maybe because we kind of talked about, you know, the absolute ceiling that they won't get to because the market is different. But the Aroldis Chapman, Andrew Miller trades 2016, where, you know, specifically Aroldis Chapman, where the Cubs gave up Gleyber Torres, who is just, you know, setting the world on fire right now. And Chapman, they also got a few other prospects for Chapman for just the rental. So, you know, they weren't going to get that, but maybe a prospect, you know, that's a top flight, top 100 guy, you know, more than just a top 10, you know, maybe close to best prospect in the system for whatever team type of a thing. Not necessarily the best depending on the system, but, you know, a pretty good one. And that was one possibility. And the other possibility I was thinking of was that it would be kind of like what happened, where it would be more just kind of mid-level prospects, but a lot of them. So that the and, you know, I obviously the first option is more exciting. But if you're the Royals and you have, you know, such a barren farm system like we've talked about so far this season, that it just – being able to kind of fill that out with some more talent, even if it's not top flight talent, just, you know, makes it a little bit better. So maybe that's their goal. Maybe that's what they were looking at. I don't know, but it does seem a little odd the way things kind of worked out, that you would have thought, I was hoping for a bigger splash, and it was more just kind of a ripple and a very sad one. 'Cause, you know, Kelvin Herrera was very emotional in his parting interview about leaving Kansas City. You know, he loved his time here. He loved the team, obviously won a championship. He won two pennants. He was a very integral part. I mean, the Royals, they don't win that World Series without him. I mean, game five, he pitched three scoreless innings with three strikeouts in game five of the World Series in 2015. So, I mean, he was very, very integral piece of winning that World Series and going to World Series the year before with such a amazing bullpen that they had both those years. He was big piece. HDH, that was, he started the whole thing.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, his time here was filled with a lot of good things and All-Star games, you know, the whole deal. And yet, you know, it had to come to an end like all things must do. And he had to, he's parted ways with the Royals. So he was pretty emotional, you know, which is always good to see. It's always, you know, fans, I think, have a tendency to get more overly attached to players than the other way around. So it's good that it's always kind of cool to see a player who, you know, really enjoyed his time with an organization and with the city and like the fans and everything. And so, you know, seeing a player like Carrera get emotional like that, you know, it's cool because it means more than just a paycheck to them. And, you know, I don't fault any player if it is only a paycheck, you know, do what you do, but it's cool. It's still cool when you see that, when something means a lot to somebody like that. So that's, you know, that was fun or not fun, but you know, that was cool to see. But it is unfortunate that he has to leave, and a little sad, bittersweet, if you will. But he's going to the Nationals, who are a very, very strong contender this year in the National League. So he's going to have a chance to win another championship, you know, definitely more than he would here this season. So, you know, good for him. Good luck to him as he moves forward. And hopefully, you know, he can be a part of something special up there, because that would be great for him. We've decided to kind of do just kind of a run through of Rivera's
sort of
retrospective, if you will, of his time here and see. So, you know, just your when you think back on Herrera's time beyond, you know, what the trade was and what they got for it, etc., what are your thoughts?
Oh, man. Herrera was probably, of all of those relievers, and the Royals have generated a lot of pretty good relievers over the years. I mean, Davis and Holland obviously stand out, but even, you know, the guys like Tim Collins, Aaron Crow had some time. Ryan Madsen, they kind of rebuilt his career. You know, even going back into, like, Ramon Ramirez and guys like that who just kind of come out of nowhere and, oh, now they're productive. But Herrera was really a guy out of all the guys that came through the bullpen, was one of my favorites. I remember back in 2012, it must have been, you know, he comes on, he's all at 22 years old, is throwing 100 miles an hour, but also has this wicked tumbling changeup. And I remember it was one of the first, like, real big, like, pitch effects, you know, kind of things that I ever did on any kind of blog. You know, it was just like I wanted to look at every possible thing going on with this changeup because it was just such a cool pitch, and kind of amazing to have a guy like Herrera who threw 100 with ease and had this changeup that's, you know, 10 to 12 miles per hour slower, same arm angle, same slot, and just falls away and makes people look silly. And I thought that's awesome. So I always think of that. I remember back in 2013, you know, he had his issues with the home run and, you know, really kind of struggled to start the year. I think gave up like 8 homers in a month. And, you know, just it was one of those things that, like, we've talked about this a lot, how sometimes the initial thing that you see or something early in someone's career sticks with them. That's something that always stuck with him. And I don't think that was ever fair, because, you know, you look at it the year after in 2014, through 70 innings, gave up 0 home runs en route to, you know, being that lead leg of HDH, that first guy out of the bullpen. And, you know, like you said, you know, I kind of looked at what he did. He didn't give up a single home run in any postseason game. All he did there in 28.2 innings in the postseason was strike out 38 guys. And like you mentioned, that World Series Game 5 really stepped up, 3 scoreless innings, pivotal, huge kind of moment for
no
him.
No runs and 38 another strikeouts in 28 innings. Refresh my memory. Is that good?
That's pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah, and then, like, the ALCS against Toronto, that's another one of those kind of memories that really sticks out. I remember we talked about this, and I remember I, like, jotted just stuff down in detail back in 2015 because game 1, he comes out, key point facing like 4, 5, 6 hitters or something and just throws a fastball by him completely, just blows him away. And then game two comes out and breaks out this slider that he'd been working on and hadn't really thrown a lot. And so these guys are gearing up for 100 and they get this pitch that looks like a fastball coming out of his hand and it's a slider and they just look silly. And it's just like, you know, it's really satisfying to see a reliever come out and do that. And he just kind of picked up the slider on the fly. He just kind of was like in August, it was like, oh, I throw a slider now.
Yeah.
Don't tell anyone. And then whips it out in 2015 in the middle of a pennant chase in the ALCS and dominates with it. And just, you know, just really fun. And last year was really difficult. You know, he had a lot of issues at various points. You know, the ERA does not look good. He gave up a lot of homers. A lot of people got really, you know, frustrated with him. But, you know, you look at it overall in Royals history, he's thrown the third most games in Royals history. Only Jeff Montgomery and Dan Quisenberry have appeared in more games as a reliever and, or as a pitcher at all. So, you know, I think that kind of puts it into perspective. Like, this is a big part of Royals history and a really big stretch of it. Not only that, you know, in his career as a Royal, he has more strikeouts as a Royal than Greg Holland did. He had threw more innings pitched than Joaquin Soria. And you think where those two guys sit in Royals lore, and Herrera's, you know, outperformed him in those two areas. So, you know, significant part of the franchise and the franchise history, traded off to Washington. And, you know, I'm glad he gets an opportunity to contend again, but, you know, his being one of my favorite players was really kind of like, well, that sucks.
Yeah.
But that's the game. That's what happens.
Yeah. And kind of to your point, you know, when running down his career stats and where he measures up, you know, it's going to be one of those things where, you know, 10, 15 years from now, I'd be watching a Royals broadcast and Ryan will have some sort of Aflac trivia question, and it'll be about, you know, top three most innings pitched or most appearances by a Royals pitcher. And people are going to say those names, Greg Holland and Wade Davis and all those other ones. And it's not going to be the answer. People are going to be like, oh yeah, Kelvin Herrera, you know, he is. So I do feel like, you know, as good as he was and as wowed as people were with him at times, for some reason he does seem to be, and it probably, to your point, is kind of because of some of those struggles he had specifically in 2013. But, you know, he kind of gets the least amount of play from all those guys. And, you know, part of it also might be because, you know, that when the HDH started, he was the seventh inning guy, which is the least exciting because it's the furthest away from the end of the game. So, you know, I guess there's you can understand that at least a little bit. But yeah, it's he really had a fantastic career for the Royals, and he's still got some good innings left in him. And it's, you know, it's quite crazy when you look at his stats overall. Sorry, I'm trying to pull it up right here. I was looking at his game logs for this year, but so, you know, when you look at his stats overall, and we talk about, you know, that 2013 season, I mean, a 3.7 or wait, hold on, sorry, look at 3.86 ERA. You know, it's like, that's not really even that bad. And I remember at the time,
yeah,
we were kind of thinking that
acceptable.
I remember at the time we were kind of thinking yeah, that, because even though it was a lot of home runs, you know, I don't recall it being like, oh, he walked the bases loaded and gave up a grand slam. You know, it's like, okay, you gave up a solo home run. Obviously, you don't want a reliever, especially in a high leverage situation, giving that up. But at the same time, you know, it's reflected in his numbers that even though he's giving up lots of home runs, it's not hurting him as bad as you would normally think. It's still not a trend that you like to see. But I even remember making those arguments at the time when we talked about it, that, you know, he's going to be okay. It's just, you know, getting out of this whatever kind of funk, whether he's, you know, whatever the case may be to why he was giving up those home runs, getting out of that was the, you know, just he had something he had to do. And eventually he did. He worked through it. And like you said, you know, he came back in 2014 and 15 and was just absolutely fantastic. 2016 as well. You know, last year he took his lumps last year, but he's come back this year and he's been just about as good as he's ever been. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's he's had quite the career, and he will go down as one of the best relievers in Royals history, as well he should. And there'll be a lot of fond memories. And that's that game five, I just remember, you know, like, man, Herrera's going back out there again. You know, it was one of those things too where I remember, you know, during the game, obviously I'm like biting my nails off, you know, in nervousness, but because right. you know, when he first comes in, the Royals are down 2-0, right? This is before the mad dash from Hosmer. This is before all that stuff. So he's just got to, you know, he's got to absolutely shut down the Mets just to give the Royals a chance to tie it up. So, but, you know, he keeps coming back out there for those three innings. And I remember they kept showing Ned Yost in the dugout. And it was one of those things where, you know, Ned Yost, he looked completely calm. And it's like, what is right. going on? Because you can tell when Ned's nervous. You know, sometimes he'll be perched up on the front of the dugout. He'll have his knee up on one of the steps or something. You know, he kind of can show when he's kind of leaning forward a little bit, if you will. But I remember him looking pretty calm in those situations, wondering, you know. But he had that confidence in Kelvin Herrera that he could get the job done, and I think that's part of what helped facilitate those teams being great, you know, to give Ned Yost some credit, his confidence in his own players and his, that definitely translated. And so, you know, I think it was one of those things where it's just like, hey, you know, you're going back out there and, you know, I know you got this. And he went back out there and he had it, no problem. So kind of crazy. That was just, that's going to be, you know, one of the greatest relief performances in, you know, Royals playoff history. It's got to be. So, you know, I didn't. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go back through and look at all the playoff performances from the 80s, but that was a historic one for the Royals.
Yeah, I just pulled it up, and you know, you're looking at he gives up a leadoff single in the seventh inning, and quickly gets a double play and a ground out, faces the minimum, bottom of the eighth. You know, just to get the Royals to that ninth inning, like you said, strikes out the side against the 1, 2, and 3 hitters. And then when the Royals have tied it up in the bottom of the ninth, all he does is shut down the 4, 5, and 6 hitters all in order. So, you know, just a huge, huge moment. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's a bummer. You know, this is how it has to go, though. Some other kind of numbers, 6th all-time in Royals history in saves, which surprised me, actually.
That is surprising. That
there weren't more guys ahead of him. But, you know, when you think about it, Wade Davis, for as long as he was here, you know, really only closed 2016 in the last part of 2015 because he was setting up for Holland for so much. So, you know, even then, it's like, okay, yeah. You know, Holland definitely had a lot of, you know, very high save totals, so he's obviously ahead. But yeah, 6th.
Wow.
That's one of those, if you did like top 6 saves in Royals history as a trivia question, I probably wouldn't have put Herrera in there simply because, you know, he just doesn't, you know, he didn't close most of the time. You know, he was the setup option, the bridge to the rest of the bullpen. And didn't really get those opportunities. So that was kind of surprising. But he is still also 7th all-time in Royals history in games finished. 23rd in strikeouts. So, I mean, middle of the pack. But you've also got a lot of, you know, starting pitchers. Kevin Apier, Zach Greinke, Paul Splittorff, Dennis Leonard, Steve Busby. You know, guys like that. So top 23 is not too shabby for, you know, 6-7 years as a Royal.
Yeah. And, you know, and we talked about this a little bit before the show. It's interesting because Herrera kind of, and I don't know what exactly this speaks to, if it's just kind of how baseball works, if it's just kind of the confluence of events that brings these players together, or the Royals' developmental philosophy and developmental ability during this time that you know, all these players were there for that run to the 2015 championship. But Herrera, like so many of those players, had kind of a similar arc to his career, which was, you know, a decently touted prospect in the minors. Like you said, he comes on, you know, he shows up, he's got this arm, and they tried to make him a starter, didn't work, kept getting hurt. So they moved him to being a reliever, and then he just took off and moved up the ranks super quick, and then pops into the league at 22 in his first full season, and, you know, just blazes a trail from there for that season. But then 2013, he has his struggles, and then it's like, well, maybe people just weren't used to him, and now everyone's got him figured out because he's only got a fastball. Maybe his other pitches aren't as good as we thought, etc. And then he works things out, and then boom, he's, you know, historically good, part of a really historically good bullpen stretch from 2014 to 2015. You know, you could kind of copy and paste that structure of a story, and it would apply to Mike Moustakas. It would apply to Eric Hosmer. It would apply, you know, there was so many players in the in that era that it would kind of apply to. So it's just another one of those interesting examples. And when you really think about it, you know, we've talked about it before in terms of the, you know, like the Washington Nationals this year going out and making a trade for Kelvin Herrera because they're trying to get that championship, especially knowing this is going to be Bryce Harper's probably last year there in Washington. So, you know, it's amazing when you really think about it and you think just how easy it is for a player, even a really good one, to have a bad season, like, or just a below average season or not as good season like his 2013 or 2017 seasons. And the fact that he and so many others for a 2-year stretch were able to raise their game and keep it that all at the same time, you know, it becomes even more amazing to think about what they accomplished and how lucky we are to have all witnessed it and seen that, you know, because it's really tough to have all that happen and to be fortunate enough to have everyone stay healthy and be able to go into the playoffs. And I mean, you just look at some of the teams that have seemed like they had it all, and, you know, the Dodgers in 2016 looking really strong, and they just, you know, they couldn't get it done. And you know, the Nationals back in 2012 when they shut down Strasburg. Remember, we talked about that on the show and whether or not that would be something that we'd be in favor of, you know? I mean, this is kind of the last year of that window for the Nationals with Bryce Harper. And you got to wonder, you know, if they can't get it done this year, then, you know, was that the right decision for them? Because that they lost in the opening round of the playoffs that year in Game 5. So, you know, having Strasburg and possibly winning one more of those games than they did, you know, that could have turned the tide of that series. So it's pretty crazy when you think about how it all worked out, and Herrera's a very good example of just kind of, you know, whether you want to say it's maybe a blind spot on the Royals' developmental philosophy or ability that they weren't able to, you know, to have him consistent right from the get-go, whatever you want to say, but the fact that he was, you know, able to have those struggles, move past them, get to an point where he was playing at an elite level for a period of time, and it coincided with all these other players. I mean, it truly is, when you really think back on it, just kind of one of those magical things about baseball. When it comes together, it's a beautiful thing, and that's what happened, which makes it just, you know, even more sad when you put that context to it to see him leave.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that there's also, like, you know, you kind of get to a point where, I don't know, we get that it's a rebuilding process, that this is kind of the nature of everything. You know, so as a result, you know, maybe we think more highly of Herrera. I don't know. But it sure seems like, you know, they were ready, you know, they were just ready to get him moved on. You know, they might have made this trade at this point because they got the right kind of salary terms. You know, the Nationals are going to carry all of the remaining contract. Usually, you know, you go back to 2015, you know, the Royals got Zobrist, they got Johnny Cueto. but they didn't take on the full remaining contract for either of those guys. And as a result, they had to give up a little extra prospect value in order to get those teams to eat a little bit of that money so that the Royals weren't taking on the whole brunt of that payroll. I think that's the biggest factor in their kind of iffy return, their kind of unexciting return, is because they're saving all of the money. And like they've moved that whole remaining contract, about $4.4 million, just off the books. Like, you know, they picked up $1 to $2 million. Maybe they get a better prospect. If they pick up all of it, they probably get a really good prospect. So that's kind of crummy to think about, because, you know, I understand it's a business, but I do think that if, you know, those business matters mean that you don't get the return on your, you know, elite level closer that you could have, then that's a little disappointing. You know, you feel like Herrera, for all he's done and for the season he's having, would get a little bit more than what they got out of the Nationals. So that's ultimately a little disappointing, even more so than just losing the player. It's just that, like, oh, that's what they got for him. And they, you know, these guys might turn out. You know, we haven't talked much about them. I guess we can do that. Just transition to that. But like, Kelvin Gutierrez is described as a good hitting third baseman, but doesn't have a lot of power. He's got all of 12 home runs and over 1,700 professional plate appearances. You know, third base is a position where you really do need some power. You know, it's not as high on the defensive spectrum, even though he is a very good defensive player by the reports. But, you know, that only gets you so far. I mean, you look at kind of the year that Mike Moustakas is having. He's already got 13 home runs in the big leagues right now. You know, and I just don't, you know, and he's having a pretty lukewarm kind of season after a hot start. So, you know, if this guy's ultimately going to be a 2 or 3 home run guy, he's got to hit a lot more. Like, he's got to be like a 300 batting average type of guy who can work some walks in order to offset some of that, because he's got to have some offensive production. You know, not that defense isn't important, but it just seems like there's not that kind of room for upside unless it's something where it's still developing. But he's going to be starting in Double A, so he's 24 in August. He used to be a shortstop. He's on the 40-man roster, so that's one thing that you know, to keep in mind, that he was added to the 40-man roster by the Nationals at some point. So, you know, I mean, it's he's not the best kind of guy to lead a prospect group, but, you know, could develop. You know, there's guys develop power late sometimes. Maybe that's the case here. Maybe it's not. Another player, Blake Perkins. He's 22 in September. He's a center fielder. He's your typical Royals center fielder type of guy. He's really fast. He's a switch hitter. He's, you know, great defense. You know, he's basically got all the tools except power. Again, not a high power guy, though he did hit 8 home runs in 2017. But only has 11 career homers since being a pro. You know, he was a second round pick, so there's definitely kind of a high regard for his tools. But the main thing that he gives is a 12% walk rate in the minors. So, you know, if that does become a good leadoff guy, yeah, that's going to have some value. Really good defensive center fielder, really good on base guy with some stolen base ability, and hopefully he can hit. That'd be great. But again, you know, when you're combining that with a fairly low upside sounding third base guy, it's underwhelming. And then kind of, you know, maybe ultimately the key to this trade, when it comes down to it, you know, we'll see in 3 or 4 years, is this Johannes Morel, even though there's not a whole lot about him out there. He's, you know, he wasn't really highly touted. He signed when he was 17. He's got 3.1 innings as a pro. You know, nothing super special about those. Does have a fastball that can touch 95. He's said to have a good slider. So, you know, maybe there's something that develops there. Maybe a third pitch comes along. Used to be an outfielder, so there's some athleticism. But that's about all I could find in you know, a little bit of searching. So, all in all, you know, you really would think that you'd get a little bit more for somebody with the track record of a Kelvin Herrera. So, you know, it's disappointing to lose him, and it's also kind of disappointing to not get that sizzle in the return. Even though ultimately, like I said right at the beginning, some scouts think that all three of these guys show what big leaguers would show. And, you know, they very well might be regulars. You know, if Morel's a number three, number four starter eventually, or a good setup man, that's, you know, there's some value in that. If Gutierrez, he's been compared to like Joe Randa. Joe Randa was a pretty productive player. He was not really a star, but he was productive. That's okay. Blake Perkins, you know, maybe he's the best of the bunch. Maybe that walk ability and the stolen base ability combined with his defense really works. The Royals sure value those kind of things. So I can see why they would make the deal like this, but it still feels like a missed opportunity to me.
I'm gonna agree with you on that. You know, it definitely lacked a lot of the sizzle, and it's, you know, they very well could be that all those players turn into, you know, major league players, I guess. But what kind of strikes me is this: especially when you talk about, you know, getting a just kind of decent hitting third baseman as part of the return. Well, it kind of falls back into this thing where I think sometimes the Royals fall in love with this idea of the Royals of the Dayton Moore era, I should say, fall in love with this idea of, you know, making sure they have a kind of filled out roster all the way through the ranks, as in somebody ready for each position, you know, to where like, okay, well, you know, we don't think Cuthbert's the guy and Moose is going to be gone. We need to have a third baseman in the system. You know, we're moving Dozier to first base or outfield, whatever. So, you know, we need to make sure we have a third baseman, that type of a thing. And I'm not certain. There's no guarantee. I don't think this, or I don't know this is what the Royals' mindset was, but it kind of feels that way. And it's felt that way, I think, in the past, that they're maybe a little more concerned than they should be, when they should really just be looking at, you know, let's find a bunch of good players. Obviously, you don't want to have a...
get the inventory.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. You don't want to have a logjam of 20 first basemen, you know, but cross that bridge when you come to it. If they're offering you two first basemen who are elite hitters at their levels, then take both of them. Figure it out later, you know? One can be a DH. Who knows? I don't care. But it's... It felt like that kind of a little bit to me. Like the Royals were looking for specific thing based on position. Back when... who was the trade? Was it the... Carlos Beltran trade, yeah, where they had to have a third baseman, or had to have, was it a catcher or a third baseman they had to have?
They had to have catcher, a catcher. That's and how a third baseman.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's how you end.
And they did get them,
but
and they were major league guys.
Sure. Yeah,
you know, I'm not saying that Tien and John Buck didn't deserve to be in the big leagues, but you know,
you think about a player of Carlos Beltran's pedigree and caliber now and what the Royals could get for him, and you think about what they did get for him at the time, you know, it looks even worse than it did back then. And it looked pretty, I don't think it looked good back at the time. I don't remember, you know, all the details about it, just because, you know, social media and all those sorts of things weren't as much of a deal. So I wasn't able to read as much on the deal as I could back then, but I don't remember people being, you know, super pumped on it. So it's,
yeah, Tien was pretty well regarded, but no, you know, not in like Will Myers top type of prospect, yeah, kind of level. You know, it's like they got a third baseman, and you know, by 2006, was that the year, he looked like, you know, he was really gonna have a good shot at doing well, and it never really panned out for him. So It does have that same kind of feel of like, okay, yeah, we got to get this. And I guess I can kind of see it in one respect, in that, you know, the Royals, a lot of their positional talent is in A ball, either low A or a high A. In fact, Nick Prado was the MVP of the South Atlantic League All-Star game last night, went 2-for-3, 2-for-4 with a homer. They don't really have someone who sticks out greatly in the upper levels. So Gutierrez is going to be at double A. So if that puts him in a position where he's maybe a couple of years from now, he's poking through and then the other guys follow behind him, then, you know, maybe then, yeah, as a complimentary piece, that's fine. But at the same time, it's like you've got one of the top trade pieces available. You're trading him with, you know, 6 weeks to spare. You're giving the Nationals an additional 6 weeks of value out of this guy. And you didn't leverage that into, you know, a little higher upside draft or, prospect. So it feels like they've kind of missed out on something significant.
Yeah.
I'm not thrilled with it. I'm not like devastated. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, what are they doing? Fire them all. Cause I mean, they do need to add some kind of, you know, prospects into the system. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I need to eat, but like,
yeah.
I can be decisive and show some discretion in what I choose.
Right.
You know, if I've got the means to find something that's better, you know, why would I not do that? And I don't know if they did that. There were reports that the Angels were asking about them and that there were discussions with the Dodgers. I don't know how far along those got. Maybe they were so preliminary and the Nationals were very ready to go. I don't know. But I'd be interested to see what the names were coming up with, especially with the Dodgers. Cause they do have some talent and they're not really that afraid to move it. Hopefully the Royals didn't miss out on somebody good from the Dodgers because they took this deal now. But you know, maybe if he does get hurt, then yeah, it is something where like, okay, they've been plenty of times where, you know, Joaquin Soria, they didn't trade him, back in, you know, 2012 or so, you know, and missed an opportunity to get some return on him. David DeJesus was having a really good year, before he became a free agent, hurt himself like a week and a half before the trade deadline, tanked his value, you know. So I don't think he was going to be a free agent. I think they maybe had one more year arbitration for him because they were still able to trade him that offseason, but they didn't get much for him. Their moment was gone. And it seems like the Royals traded before their moment was here with Herrera. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, but I'm open-minded to the idea that, you know, hey, maybe there's something to these guys, but you know, a lot of people in the industry are just like, well, they're guys. They'll probably play at the big league level. Who's to say how good they'll actually be?
Yeah.
Who knows? So
yeah,
it's kind of disappointing that way.
And specifically if what you mentioned, that some of the kind of people theorizing about the Royals' return could have been, if it turns out to be true that just because, you know, I think Herrera was owed somewhere around $4-4.5 million or something for the rest of the year, and
it's somewhere in that ballpark.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, if that's the case, and the Royals were missed out on a higher level prospect, even if it's just one of the three, because they refused to pick up the tab on that $4-4.5 million. I mean, that's kind of crummy, and it feels like it felt like we were past that stuff. All the glass is cheap narrative and everything. We've put that to bed. At least I thought we had, specifically from, you know, I mean, a couple of years of $120, $130, $140 million payrolls in there, and continuing to pump money into the organization and everything, I thought we were kind of at the point where David Glass was like, okay, I get it. I'm not going to make money every year, but I understand if that we put the money in the right places, if we make the right decisions with the money, we can get a return. I mean, how much money did they make in those couple of years with all the playoff revenue, et cetera? Who knows? But
they made a chunk off of me alone.
Yes, exactly,
so.
Both of us. So it's just, it kind of sucks that if that really is the case, and that's, you know, what prevented the Royals from getting even just a little bit better of a prospect. I mean, $4 million for someone like a David Glass or just for a Major League Baseball team, it's really not that much in the grand scheme of things for them. So it's disappointing if that's the actual case. And I kind of thought we were past that. So I hope that's not it. I hope it's just the Royals had to make the best deal they could, and this is what the best they could get for whatever reason. But it does kind of – it makes a lot more sense than it should to why the Royals got the return that they did if they were just refusing to pick up that $4 million. So,
yeah. And when you think about it, like last week we talked about draft pick signings, you know, $4.4 million is about the equivalent of, I mean, I don't have the slots in front of me, but that's probably about a 12th overall pick. So let's say you invest that just eat that $4 million and you can maybe get a prospect a little higher up that chain. You know, maybe Carter Kiboom. I don't even know how to pronounce his name.
Yeah.
I hope it's Kiboom. Kaboom.
Kaboom. Yeah.
Get someone like that. Get, you know, just get someone a little higher up that scale who maybe has a little more of that upside to be, you know, not just a big leaguer, but a very good one. You know, if you can do that and you're basically getting someone who's proven, you know, that they can play a bit at the pro level, you know, it's a lot different than just a draft pick where you think they can, but you haven't gotten them into your system yet. You know, guys who have a couple of years as a professional, you know, I would think that $4 million is a worthy investment if it's someone who can really impact the talent level of your club in a couple of years and almost even feels a little more safe than your typical draft pick because they've kind of already shown that they can handle those levels. I mean, it's just if that is the main reason, and it sure seems like it, I mean,
it feels very Royals for that to be the main reason.
It feels very old school Royals to be worrying about that. I don't know. I don't know if that's great or not. I wonder if then that is going to lead to some of the similar things when Mike Moustakas is coming up for trades. You know, is that going to be a problem dealing him, or is it going to be the same spot where they don't want to take on any salary to the team that they trade him to? You know, is that going to be another thing where you get less of a return? And we've already talked about how the market might be really weird for him anyway. You know, it's going to be pretty difficult to say, here's Moustakas, who doesn't have a great market trade-wise, and you also don't get any cash from us. Yeah. I don't know what teams will give up for that. And, you know, it seems like that's also a potential missed opportunity. And, you know, when it's really not much different, you know, I mean, yeah, they have a certain amount available for draft picks based on the slotting system and the draft pool. But, like, ultimately $4 million towards a player is $4 million towards a player. And it's like if you're paying that out in order to get a better prospect into your system, it just seems like the return on that long term is a lot better. I mean, you're probably going to get excess value in their three non-arbitration years if they're a good enough player anyway. So, I mean, you're probably going to be saving money in the long run just on, you know, three good years from someone in their you know, rookie in you know, first three seasons. So I don't know. I hope that wasn't the primary motivation. Maybe not the primary, but it seemed like that was a very important element to the trade. And it impacted the level of talent that the Royals now have in their minor league system. So that's, you know, I hate to say the word again, but it's a disappointment.
Yeah. Let's hope that's not the case. But like you said, it feels like there's a good chance that it is. So,
so that's great.
Yeah. So that kind of wraps up the Herrera trade. Interestingly enough, for the second time this year, the Royals have traded away or released a player and then brought in a player with the exact same name, last name, surname. They brought in Rozel Herrera, and they've brought up Raul Mondesi. So, you know, and that, of course, also comes in conjunction with Jorge Soler going on the DL out for at least 6 weeks. So that kind of sucks because, you know, we talked about how he's, you know, having a solid season for him. And we were looking forward to, you know, what he could get with an entire season's worth of bats. And, you know, unfortunately, we are going to miss a huge chunk of that. So, I mean, he was hitting pretty well. 820 OPS. He had 9 home runs. You know, he was having a solid season, a season that we would hope that he was having at least. But, you know, unfortunately, so hopefully he can get back and get, you know, a good month at the end of the season, maybe, and be able to, you know, keep moving forward with his skill set. But the most interesting thing that comes, most of those are just kind of moves, you know. The most interesting thing coming up from that is the, you know, Mondesi being back, and, you know, here we are again with this with this situation. And they've come out and said, and they've kind of flip-flopped and meandered around and moseyed and kicked around, whatever, but, you know, essentially they're giving Mondesi priority, and they're going to start moving Escobar around. They even talked about center field for Alcides Escobar, believe it or not. I saw Rustin Dodd tweeting on that the other day. I mean, it's they're essentially just like, well, which, you know, classic Royals. Any way we can keep Escobar in the lineup, let's take it, right?
Yeah.
One of the worst hitters in baseball. But
please keep that 204 average and 250 on base.
Please. We must have that available to us. But they're going to, you know, this is kind of the changing of the guard, the passing of the mantle to Alberto Mondesi. And Escobar, you know, they asked him about it, and he said, hey, he's a great kid. I'm here to help. I'm going to help him with whatever he needs. It's his show now, essentially. You know, I mean, for what it's worth, Escobar, I think, is very aware of who and what he is at this point as a player. So I think he's just kind of happy to be playing baseball and filling any role that he can, and he's going to ride this thing out as long as he can. So props to him for that. You know, that's awesome to see kind of a veteran player say, I'm going to take this, you know, the new kid, if you will, under my wing and try and make sure he's gets off on the right foot. So hopefully he can avoid some of the pitfalls that kind of plagued Escobar. Escobar had some very good seasons and some very good time, but he, you know, was always mired with some issues throughout his career in terms of his ability to get on base and consistently hit for average, et cetera. So hopefully if he can, you know, kind of pass on what he's learned, then maybe Mondesi will be able to avoid some of those pitfalls. But I mean, how do you feel about this? I don't know. It's just, it feels kind of weird, almost like it's forced. I don't know. It feels just over ceremonial almost. I don't know. It just, the whole thing feels weird to me. I mean, I'm in favor of, you know, reducing Escobar's role in favor of a younger player, but just the way that they're kind of going about it, it's so very Royals and weird, if you ask me.
They're going out of their way to find at bats for Escobar, and they've been going out of their way to find, you know, a couple starts a week for Ryan Goins. And it's just like, these things don't make a lot of sense because they're not very good hitters. I don't know. I mean, I think if Mondesi's up, I'd like to see him play as much as they can get him. There are definite health concerns that they've had. He's had little things, shoulder things, back things here and there pretty much every year since he's been in full season ball. So, the Royals seem to be aware of that. They started out, it came out that they were going to try to play him 3 to 4 times a week at shortstop. They walked that back a bit, down to 1 to 2. I don't know. Tonight, Mondesi's at second. Escobar's is at short. So, you know, there you go. But I want to see him play. You know, he's only 22, so I hesitate to say that, you know, there's nothing left for him at AAA, but there's also a certain point where it's like, yeah, you kind of want to see what he can do. You know, the Royals are in a position where they can give at bats to a young player, let him kind of figure it out. You know, they've done this with, you know, Hunter Dozier, and Dozier, he's kind of back down the slope a little bit right now, but he's come out and various times he looks like he belongs. Mm-hmm. And it's because they had the opportunity to bring him up when Duda got hurt, and they, you know, don't have a playoff race to worry about. So they can just give him at bats, see what he can do, see how he can figure out the game and how he makes adjustments. We've seen Mondesi with, you know, short stints in the big leagues and really, really struggle, like completely overmatched. But we've seen him in spring training and in the minors where he hits well. So, you know, if he's figuring out some things and maybe it's just a matter of really committing to it, you know, it'll work. I hope that's the case. I mean, I want to see him play just because I want to see if it does pan out. And I do think that if he's playing, I want to see him at shortstop. You know, ultimately he's going to need to be the shortstop. You know, if he's getting beat out by like Nicky Lopez or Jack Lopez or whomever it might be below him in the system, then, you know, it probably wasn't meant to be. Not anything against those guys, but like Mondesi, for, you know, the pedigree that he's got and, you know, the skills that he has and the tools the Royals have always liked and other people have always liked, you know, he really should be able to hold that down. And so I think they should get every opportunity they can to see if he can do it at this level.
He's,
you know, not like every day.
I was just going to say, he's the only top 100 type level prospect the Royals have had basically for the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. And the only reason he's really not, is just because they did play him.
He's
and,
not eligible.
And like there are levels where they stop considering a guy a prospect because they played X amount in the big leagues. And maybe for Mondesi's sake, that's not that fair because, you know, he is still very young and the Royals pushed him pretty quickly. But like, I want to see him play, you know, I want to see what he can do. I want to see him at shortstop. I don't expect him to play 407 days or games in a row like Escobar is working on right now. But, you know, if they've got, you know, however many games they've got left, what, 90 games, 89 games, mm-hmm. you know, I'd like to see him play most of those at shortstop if he's healthy, if he's playing well, if he doesn't get sent back down, you know, just to be sure that he can do it. I mean, you know, he's not going to stick in this league. He's not going to be a star for the Royals playing second base.
No.
You know, he should be playing shortstop. And if that means that you move, you know, Escobar around, play him at second. All right, I guess you could do that. Try him in the outfield. You could do that too. Yeah, I guess. But I would also think that, you know, there might be other players that you want to give an opportunity to see what they can do. So that's another thing is like, you know, if Escobar is taking at bats away from someone who can maybe figure some things out, that's not ideal. But they do like Escobar and they like, you know, what he brings to the team. They always have. So this is nothing new, but like if it was my choice, I would try to see as much Mondesi as short as I could. You know, I think that they already kind of seem to have clarified their position, suggests that he's probably going to play a lot of second, which, you know, it's not a travesty, but it just seems like it doesn't really seem to develop him that much.
It's a waste, you know, like
second base.
If he's your guy at shortstop moving forward and you've basically made a public declaration that Escobar is passing the torch, then that's what's disappointing about tonight's lineup. You know, it's like, why? I completely agree with you. Why would you ever spend the time to put him in the game and not put him at shortstop? If you think he's going to be, unless the Royals don't think he's going to be a shortstop. And they want him to get,
which could
it
be.
Could be, but I mean, if yeah. they think he's going to be a shortstop, he needs to be out there playing shortstop. And, you know, it kind of sucks that he's not, cause I want to see him out there and see what he can do. And it's, you know, it feels like, you know, early mid 2000s Royals, you know, where it's just like, oh, well, we don't want to, you know, upset Escobar.
We got to play Doug Mankiewicz.
Yeah, you know, we're not going to.
Let's not call up, who was the guy? The Australian guy, Justin Huber.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Let's not bring him up. You know, we got to play Doug McCabe. Yeah, was that the same year? I don't know if that was
regardless.
Year or not,
the point stands. It feels like the Royals should be past this at this point. You know, to where, okay, Escobar, thank you for your time.
They're not going
to
be any worse.
Yeah. You know, Escobar, thank you for your time. We appreciate it, but you know, your role is going to be reduced, and it's it's Mondesi's time now. So that's where we're going. You know, everyone's gotta go through it. It's like with that scene in Moneyball.
The Moneyball, yeah.
The time comes for everyone. It's different for everybody, but it comes for everyone. So you know, it's here for Escobar. Maybe even a little late, but. It doesn't make sense just to see him, to have Mondesi out there and have him not as shortstop if you think he's the shortstop of your future. So that can be the only conclusion that you draw. Maybe the Royals don't think that.
Yeah, I mean, they might not. I don't know. I mean, it's, or maybe they're just, I don't know. I mean, they can't be much worse with Mondesi at short regularly.
No.
You know, they're not playing good baseball. What's it going to hurt to try him there? You know, and I would think for Escobar, who's, you know, 31, give him a day off every now and then. Maybe he would play better. Like, I'm not ready to, like, roast him just because, you know, he's not my favorite player by any stretch.
No.
But he's had good stretches. Yeah. And, you know, if he gets, you know, 2 days off a week, maybe he's more productive. I don't know. I mean, it seems like it could be something worth exploring. Rather than trying to find a way to play him at third that maybe he hasn't played since like 2008. Like, I don't know the last time he played third base, but I sure as heck know it wasn't with the Royals.
Yeah.
I should probably check that to verify. Let me click his link here just to be sure, but I would be absolutely shocked if he played anywhere but shortstop for the Royals ever in his time here.
Maybe second. No, I don't think he would have played second. Yeah.
He has literally no games anywhere but shortstop for the Royals. Literally none.
Yep.
He played in the outfield in 2010 with the Brewers for a couple of games. That was it. He has 17 innings in the big leagues in the outfield and 11,000 innings, almost 12,000 innings at shortstop.
There you go.
So, you know, and most of those, he's been very good. He's usually been a really good shortstop.
Yeah, definitely.
He just is not a good hitter.
No, and that happens, you know. But
yeah,
even though he's had his moments, he did have an inside the park home run in the World Series. So there is that.
He did, and ALCS
That's
MVP
right.
in 2015. So he's done it, but I mean, 2015 was a long, long time ago.
Yes,
it feels longer ago every day.
Yes, it does.
Which technically is true.
It is very true, yes.
but more symbolically, figuratively. Yes, as well as literally. But yeah, I mean, yeah.
Exactly. So I think that kind of sums it up for the Royals a week here. They're as you mentioned, they're 22-51. So, I mean, things continue to go not well. They
get to play Houston again.
Which is, you know, great news. Houston,
that went well the first time.
They're currently sitting at the number 2 pick in the draft right now for next year. So, who knows? Gunning for that number 1 spot. But Baltimore's likely to trade Manny Machado. And that would make them even worse. So
yeah, Adam Jones
nope,
too.
That's
is
right.
Probably
yep, good call. So who knows? We'll see what happens. But yep, unfortunately, it hasn't been the we've seen better times as Royals fans. But hopefully, you know, they'll make some more trades. We'll inject some life into the organization. Have some more fun things to talk about, and not just continual send offs. Although next on the list would have to be Mike Moustakas.
I think so.
Even though
Jason Hamill's probably in the mix somewhere, not for much, but you know, decent chance he'll be traded somewhere. Lucas Duda is on a rehab assignment in Omaha, so he can return, you know, in a couple weeks. you know, if he comes out and hits well, he might just get dumped off somewhere too. So not that we have a long-standing connection with him or Jason Hamill for that matter, but, you know,
yep.
They're Royals now.
Indeed. So. Indeed.
Technically.
Yes. So, all right. Well, with that, we will leave you. So thank you all so much for joining. Be sure to visit our sponsors. If you want to read up a little bit more, on the prospects and the trade and everything, Clint Scholes is a great write-up on BP Kansas City, so be sure to go there. There's also a fun little article David Leske wrote as we're approaching, getting closer to that All-Star break, talking about the best against the Royals players, players that have done, you know, done really well against the Royals specifically. Someone like a Maglio Ordóñez always comes to mind. God, I hate that guy. Just Jim Thome. Guys that just – I think Jim Thome has more home runs in Coffin Stadium than any other non-George Brett player. But, yeah, Albert Pujols, I think Albert Pujols –
in the realm of possibility.
I think Albert Pujols had a really good, you know, against the Royals. I haven't looked at the full list.
Definitely with the Cardinals, he did.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much with the Angels.
Yeah.
But
definitely Cardinals, not in the playoff in 2014. 750. Right?
Hey, hey. Nope.
Hey-o. The one that mattered, the Royals got him. So –
yeah,
but yeah. So be sure to visit them, and then of course Kelly's Westport Inn. Weather gets nice. You know, you got getting ready for that July 4th weekend coming up. Want to go out to Westport, have a good time. Hop into Kelly's, have yourself a few beers, watch a Royals game. It'll make it easier if you have some beers and good people to watch it with. And those, thankfully, are plentiful at Kelly's. So go and visit them. They've been a great sponsor to us for a long time. Until then. We'll see you next week. So maybe we'll have another trade to talk about. Who knows? But we'll see you next time. Until then, thank you so much for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.